we didn't time it that way. It just kind of fell on my calendar day. I suppose I should feel special.
Senator Murkowski gives the Republican response to the stimulus plan. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, the 16th of February. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, more than just sled dogs and mushers are running the Yukon Quest Trail.
I just don't want to get really cold, and the nights here are so freezing that I'm just going to try and stay as warm as I can.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. It's never too early to set expectations and goals for your child's education. The UA College Savings Plan provides opportunities that can help you reach your educational savings goals. Save in Alaska, study anywhere. There's more information available by calling 1-888-4 and then Alaska. This message sponsored by the UA College Savings Plan.
Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski delivered the Republican response to President Obama's weekly radio address Saturday. She spoke against the nearly $790 billion economic stimulus package the Democratic-led Congress passed last week.
Democrats, it seems, settled on a random dollar amount in the neighborhood of $1 trillion and then set out to fill the bucket. Republicans, on the other hand, thought that we should figure out what was at the root of the problem and then see how much it would cost to fix.
Senator Murkowski followed standard practice and recorded the address on Friday before actually hearing or reading President Obama's radio address. It was her first time delivering the response, which is a role reversed for Republican leaders. Murkowski was asked to give it because she is now one of three senators serving as counsel to Republican Minority Leader Mitch McConnell. She's the only woman currently in that role. Alaska's senior senator says she lucked into delivering the radio address on such a high-profile weekend right after the stimulus debate.
We had talked about this some weeks ago and talking about, well, as part of the leadership team that I'm now on, it's like, okay, you know, we're all going to take turns doing the radio address, and so I'll do it this weekend, you do it this weekend, Lisa, you do it this weekend. It just so happens that it's the weekend following the stimulus, so we didn't time it that way. It just kind of fell on my calendar day. I suppose I should feel special.
Murkowski says she's enjoying her position of appointed counselor to Senator McConnell because, unlike in elected party leadership, she doesn't have to be as mindful of how she's representing the party and can instead focus on her own ideas.
I'm asked for my input, my advice. I can speak up and be a participant that way, perhaps without some of the confines. It's actually a pretty good place to be. But I am cognizant of the fact that other members of my conference are looking to me and what I'm saying and what I'm doing.
Earlier this month, Murkowski met with a group of moderate Democrats and Republicans to try and hammer out a compromise on the stimulus package. But she left the bargaining table, saying it wasn't going in the direction she wanted. Now, over the weekend, she was the voice of the party against the bill. In her nearly 5.5 minute long address, Murkowski called the Democrats' stimulus plan wasteful and burdensome to local and state governments and expressed concerns about the debt the country is already under. She referenced her home state once.
One Alaska school superintendent said that the increased funding means new services in his district, but that once the stimulus funding runs out, he won't be able to pay for them. And canceling some of these programs once they've been created, he said, would expose his district to lawsuits.
Senator Murkowski's office would not say which Alaskan superintendent made those comments. President Obama plans to sign the stimulus package into law tomorrow. In his radio address, he touted the chance to upgrade America's schools, health facilities, and energy sources, and called the plan necessary.
It will save or create more than 3.5 million jobs over the next 2 years, ignite spending by businesses and consumers alike, and lay a new foundation for our lasting economic growth and prosperity.
Obama also announced a website that will track spending of the stimulus money. The latest estimates say it will mean 8,000 jobs for Alaska and bring to the state $175 million in highway funding, more than $93 million in state stabilization funds, and $28 million in state energy programs. As state lawmakers prepare tomorrow to look at a bill that would loosen wastewater restrictions for cruise ships, state regulators have cited 8 cruise ships for air quality violations in 2008. The Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation issued 10 notices of violations, a 5-fold increase from 2007. The notices were issued to ships owned by Celebrity International Shipping Partners, Princess Cruises, Norwegian Cruise Line, Holland America, and Royal Caribbean. Celebrity is owned by Royal Caribbean Limited, Princess and Holland America are owned by Carnival Corporation, Miami-based Norwegian Cruise Line is owned by the Gentling Group and Apollo Management. The DEC took 224 readings compared to 170 the previous year. Denise Koch, the DEC's cruise ship program manager, says the increase alone doesn't account for the jump in violations found. DEC regulators take readings on their own schedule, but they also take readings if people call with complaints about a particular ship. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Alaska Native leaders have high hopes for new inroads with the Obama administration.
I think that we're on the brink of a major leap in our relationship with the federal government.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by the new AT&T, your world delivered.
The Obama administration could offer Alaska Natives new opportunities in government and business. That's according to presidents of the Alaska Federation of Natives and the Sea Alaska Corporation. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
AFN President Julie Kitka says Native groups are well organized and focused on their goals. Speaking at a forum of Native leaders in Juneau, she said that could help with opportunities offered by the changing economic climate as well as the new administration.
I think that we're on the brink of a major leap in our relationship with the federal government. And if you remember when we went in the whole mode of self-determination, and that was in about 1975, U.S. policy changed from assimilation to self-determination. I think we're on the edge of a whole new brink in this relationship, a whole step up from the self-determination model, and economic self-determination is going to have to be the key to that.
Kitka and Sea Alaska President Chris McNeil say the Obama administration has included a significant number of Native voices in its transition and agency teams. McNeil says plans for a White House-level advisor on tribal issues represents a welcome change.
I think it's a pivotal strategic appointment for all of Native America, including Alaska Natives, because this will be the policy pivot in the White House, and it will have an impact on not only what the policies are, but how they're implemented in the agencies.
He says efforts have been ongoing to include Native corporations and tribal groups in stimulus package formulas. Kitka says AFN and other groups hope to improve relations with federal agencies.
With the Obama administration, one of the first things that we need to be working with National Congress of American Indians is a new restatement of the government-to-government relationship between the federal government and Native people. And we need to use the positive momentum we have in this new administration for change, and recognizing our capacity is we need to move that up a notch, and I think this is the time to do it.
Kitka and McNeil spoke at the February 11th Native Issues Forum at the capital city's Alaska Native Brotherhood Hall. This is Ed Schoenfeld reporting from Juneau.
Alaska State Troopers have released the results of an internal review into an officer involved in a shooting at Central Peninsula Hospital in Soldotna in November. The review found that troopers took appropriate action and used appropriate force when they shot and killed 47-year-old Joseph Marcetti on November 26th. Marcetti, who had been fired from the hospital a day earlier, returned and shot two of his former supervisors, Mike Webb and Margaret Strope. Webb died and Strope was critically injured. Investigators found that Marcetti later shot at and advanced on troopers and Soldotna police with his gun and refused to comply with instructions. The internal policy and procedure reviews follow an inquiry by the Alaska Bureau of Investigation, a state trooper department that investigates all trooper-involved shootings. That investigation was in turn reviewed by the Office of Special Prosecutions and Appeals. Trooper spokeswoman Beth Epstein with the OSPA is an outside agency.
That falls underneath the Department of Law. That is a separate department. And they review the findings, basically what ABI investigators come up, they take what they found, review it, you know, and then they come out with their findings. So it is reviewed by outside entity.
Epstein says no further investigations will be conducted into the incident. Central Peninsula Hospital also had an investigation into its hiring and firing practices following the shooting. It found no warning signs that would have predicted the incident. The Yukon Quest sled dog race got underway Saturday, and so far reports are the running remains smooth, with William Cleeden in the front spot. Cleeden is checked into the Stepping Stone hospitality stop. He arrived there at 11:35 this morning, checked out of Pelly Crossing, and in second place is Hugh Neff. Also checked out of Pelly Crossing is Hans Gott in third, Brent Sass in fourth, and John Little rounds out the current top five. Mushers report good trail so far, with clear skies and below zero temperatures, near perfect for a dog race. That's made for no scratches and few problems through the first 250 miles. KUAC's Dan Bross is on the Yukon Quest Trail and has this report from CarMax.
This year's Yukon Quest has been a little bland. Things are just running unusually smoothly for an event that normally results in dog and musher injuries and damaged sleds and other gear. Veteran Quest musher Hugh Neff says trail conditions were so nice over the weekend that he got a little too relaxed.
I didn't get bored, but I was yawning a little bit at times.
Neff, who's been the race's rabbit in some past years, says it's important not to get lured into running too fast too soon, a strategy he says he knows doesn't work.
You want to be fast the last 100 miles. Anybody can be fast the first 100 miles.
Neff and others say you can't get carried away with what you think other mushers are doing, but they're also fiercely competitive. Front runner John Little has a watch on both wrists and admits to being very time conscious, even if he can't do anything about it.
It's all going to be what it's going to be. You know, if somebody gets out ahead of me, there's nothing I can do.
Little says he's always calculating and comparing run times, and that so far his team looks good.
Pulling and moving really well. I have no injuries.
Little says trail conditions have been just soft enough to cushion canine feet, taking hundreds of thousands of steps a day. With conditions so good, a lot depends on what you do with them. One of the sport's younger competitors, Brent Sass of Fairbanks, says he uses his own physical fitness to speed his team down the trail.
I plan on kicking and pulling this entire way. I sewed on my Equinox Marathon patch onto my jacket this year. That's part of my big part of my training.
Sass says he's also honing his gear for performance, and like many mushers, is regularly changing the plastic runners on his sled during the race.
I think it's a real advantage if your sled runners go down the trail fast. So, just another one of those details that you really got to pay attention to.
Sass says he has temperature-specific varieties of runners stashed at checkpoints along the trail. New Hampshire musher Mike Ellis says he's trying to improve in his second Quest run by listening to his dogs better.
I got a little pulled into the checkpoints last year and adjusted more for them. And this year, I'm a little more comfortable being out on the trail, and I'll try to adjust to what the dogs need more than what I need.
Another factor that comes into play is how mushers deal with personal issues like injuries. They can range from frost-nipped fingers to more serious conditions. William Cleeden pinched a nerve in his back before the race.
I couldn't even walk a single dog. There was no way I could have grabbed a dog and put it onto the line. I tried. As a matter of fact, actually, since I'm on the runners, I do better.
Cleeden is popping anti-inflammation pills that make him sleepy, but says he won't scratch unless he's reduced to crawling. One pain many mushers are coping with this year is unprecedented media attention. Over 100 reporters and producers are covering the race, representing newspapers, television, radio, and web outlets. Jamaican musher Newton Marshall is an obvious target and the subject of one of three documentaries being shot along the trail. He says he's trying to maintain focus.
I just want to do my work, and I don't want to have any problems, and, you know, too much media, you know, you will get problems. I'm looking forward to being in the woods, running my team. That's it.
Marshall is running in the middle of the pack so far. Amazing for a guy who hadn't seen snow just 2 years ago. But he's had some help. Marshall is apprenticed with three-time Quest champion Hans Gott as part of a Jamaican businessman's promotional project. Reporting on the Yukon Quest Trail in CarMax, I'm Dan Bross.
In addition to dogs and mushers, hardy athletes from around the world are running, biking, and skiing their way to Dawson City this week on the Yukon Quest Trail. The 7th Yukon Arctic Ultra got underway yesterday morning in Whitehorse. And as Nancy Thompson reports from the CBC, the race boasts one of the largest and most determined fields.
It's not the Bahamas.
This racer was one of dozens who took to the trail yesterday in minus 22 temperatures. Some were doing the short haul, a marathon distance. Others are running to Braeburn or to Pelly Crossing. But the majority have their sights set on the prize, Dawson City, nearly 700 cold kilometers away. Some say the distance isn't the hard part.
My name is Hubert Cantiola. I came from Austria. The distance is not the problem. The cold and very long alone.
Sophie Collette from England shares that pragmatic concern.
A bit scared right now. A little bit scared.
Oh, what are you most afraid of?
The cold. I just don't want to get really cold, and the nights here are so freezing that I'm just going to try and stay as warm as I can.
Brother and sister team of Scott and Sid Fraser grew up in Whitehorse and were competitive cross-country skiers. They'll be on their skis all the way to Dawson. Sid Fraser says her brother isn't the chatty sort, so she's brought along a backup.
Yeah, he doesn't talk much, so I've got a little iPod. Yeah, man a few words.
The first racer is expected into Dawson City within 6 days. Nancy Thompson, Whitehorse.
One Homer resident says it's not too soon to start prepping for the governor's race in 2010. Rob Rosenfeld has thrown his hat into the ring, hoping to become the Democratic challenger against Governor Sarah Palin in the next election. Rosenfeld says he'll run on the issues of economics, energy, rural issues, education, and the environment. His experience spans most of those years, having worked in the nonprofit sector for 27 years. He has strong ties in rural Alaska and for the past 11 years has worked with tribal leaders to create the Yukon River Intertribal Watershed Council.
What happens in rural Alaska is critical to the overall state and is also important to have on our priority list the reality of more than 250 communities in rural Alaska.
Rosenfeld says as governor, meeting with the rural advisor would be critical, something he says that has not been a priority in Palin's administration.
We were all very enthused that it looked like she was going to be very concerned with rural issues. She would be briefed on those issues. Many organizations and individuals met with the rural issues advisor to make sure she was aware of current issues. And then we came to find out that the rural issues advisor wasn't able to secure a meeting with the governor for about 10 months. And I'm sure that can be verified by looking on the governor's calendar.
Rosenfeld is not shy about expressing criticism of the state's current governor, and his decision to run stems largely from what he sees as Palin's absenteeism and lack of follow-through.
But one of my campaign promises is that I will show up for work, and I know that would be a refreshing change.
But while Rosenfeld is vocal about his opposition to Governor Palin, he says the larger picture is what he will do for economic issues, promising sustainable initiatives that will offer jobs, environmental protection, and improve quality of life for all Alaskans.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
Herring and salmon issues will occupy much of the Alaska Board of Fisheries' attention for the next 10 days during its spring meeting in Sitka. The board will begin hearing public testimony tomorrow afternoon on nearly 160 proposals for the management of southeast salmon runs and some species of state-managed groundfish like ling cod. The board lays down rules for both commercial and sport fisheries and is an influential player in some important subsistence fisheries. The Sitka Tribe of Alaska, the federally recognized tribal government for the area, is hoping to use its home court advantage to bring about some long sought after changes in the commercial sacro herring fishery. Sacro is stripped intact from female herring and sold as a seasonal delicacy in Japan. About 50 seiners in the fishery landed about $18 million worth of herring last year in a record harvest. This season's harvest is predicted to be even larger. But tribal citizens, over a quarter of Sitka's population, say the huge harvests have a proportionally harmful effect on their harvest of subsistence roe on branches, a staple subsistence food important to Native Alaskans throughout the region and state. Harvey Kitka is a tribal elder and chairs the STA's Herring Committee.
Sitka Sound is basically the last real stronghold of herring spawn in southeast Alaska. The spawn around Ketchikan and Wrangell and Juneau and these outlying areas used to have spawn of their own. The people used to get their own eggs at those places. Now they don't get a spawn, and a lot of them ask us to collect it for them since we still have a fair spawn, and even though we have to work at it real hard, it's still one of the major stocks in Southeast.
Among other proposals, the tribe will try to convince the board that the commercial harvest of herring should be capped at 10,000 tons and that test fishing prior to the harvest should count against the overall quota. The tribe has already begun holding training sessions to coach subsistence harvesters on how best to testify before the Board of Fisheries, and while much of the testimony will rely on the personal histories of tribal elders like Kitka, the tribe is also working with contract biologists, divers, and other researchers to develop a science-based strategy to curb the commercial harvest. Along with herring, salmon issues will be in the forefront of the spring meeting, particularly enhanced allocation. Southeast's two regional hatcheries have dramatically expanded their production beyond pink and chum in the past 15 years. Some user groups, like gillnetters and seiners, believe the allocation of enhanced stocks has been skewed. The Board of Fisheries has allowed a day and a half for public testimony on the proposals. The board is scheduled to take final action on Southeast and Yakutat finfish proposals during deliberations in Sitka beginning Tuesday, February 24th. The Alaska Energy Authority met in Wrangell late last week to discuss hydroelectric power in Southeast. As KSTK's Tony Gorman reports, the AEA was focused on trying to get Southeast communities to work together, as well as trying to decide what to do with funds for a proposed Alaska-British Columbia intertie.
Representatives from Southeast communities came together at the Nolan Center in Wrangell with the common goal of developing hydropower in the region. The biggest topic of the meeting was the use of the remaining AKBC intertie funds. Members of the Wrangell Assembly and the Energy Committee sought to release the remaining $650,000 to complete the intertie. Wrangell Assembly member Jeremy Maxan presented the plan to the AEA work group, and it did not take long for red flags to go up. Some members were confused as to how much money is going back to Alaska. Jim Strandberg is project manager for AEA. He says the group felt that Wrangell's plan did not have an acceptable approach.
I think what we're looking to is, because of our custodianship of the funds, is we really seek to find out the actions that they want us to take. They have, of course, seek to get control of the funds, but there are some barriers to that.
Strandberg says the group has a responsibility of spending state-appropriated money on a need basis, and Wrangell did not show that. The original plan was drafted by the Energy Committee 2 weeks ago, only to have it tabled at Tuesday's assembly meeting. That gave the committee less than 2 days to revise the plan. Maxen says Wrangell's plan was clear after the revision.
The money that was appropriated that we've been discussing was for an AKBC intertie exploration, and the people of Wrangell have been very clear, as well as other folks from Native communities around the area and in Canada, have been really clear that we want to take the ball and run with it. We want to make this project happen, or at least get it to what we're hearing is a shovel-ready state, so that when it is time to do construction, we can.
In the end, Wrangell did not persuade the work group enough to receive the funds. The meeting came to an abrupt end before the group could vote on the issue. The work group told Wrangell to present a detailed document on their plans at a future meeting. Another issue was Southeast communities working together on the AKBC intertie and future projects. Wrangell and Petersburg were already divided over developing hydropower at Ruth Lake. In recent weeks, both communities, along with Angoon, separately filed for a permit with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Much of the rift has to do with Wrangell choosing to file with private utility Cascade Creek LLC. The company also filed with Angoon. AEA Executive Director Steve Hagenson expressed unity throughout the meeting. He says there have been recent discussions of reappropriating the money to other projects.
At the end of the day, I think if you want, you need to find the win-win to make sure that they're actually not just making it a win-lose, where you're taking something away from somebody else and you're going to be enriched. You find the place where you can both walk away with your head high.
Despite the positive encouragement, some felt like they were left in the dark after the meeting. Petersburg City Manager Richard Underkoffler says the city supports working with other communities on the intertie, but there needs to be some accountability on how the money is spent.
The concern over here is, you know, our relationship with Cascade Creek is not very good because they're pulling off all these shenanigans in terms of development in Thomas Bay. So our concern is, and since we're not communicating, that they would take this money and pass it through to Duff Mitchell and his Cascade Creek group to just as another source of financing for their development in Thomas Bay.
Underkoffler says it is still on the table for Wrangell and Petersburg to work together on the AKBC intertie and other projects. For now, Wrangell will try to regroup from Thursday's meeting. AEA's next meeting has not been scheduled. Whether the word unity got across to all Southeast communities has yet to be seen. Reporting from Wrangell, I'm Tony Gorman.
Commercial crabbers in Southeast began fishing for Tanner and Golden King Crab over the weekend. Both seasons opened at noon on Sunday. The region's Tanner crab season has a guideline harvest level of 931,000 pounds. The Tanner crab season has seen a drop in harvest and in effort in recent years. Alaska Department of Fish and Game shellfish research biologist Julie Bednarski outlined some of the numbers from the Tanner crab fishery before the state's Board of Fish in January.
The long-term average in Southeast is 1.5 million pounds. Overall, the amount of effort and catch is declining. The 2007-2008 season was about 605,000 pounds, which is the smallest season since 1970-71. And the last seven seasons have produced the lowest catches since 1985.
Last year's Tanner catch came in at just over 600,000 pounds, a drop from the year before, as fewer permit holders went after Tanner. Prices last year averaged $1.69 a pound, with the overall catch worth around $1 million at the docks. Some in the fleet chose instead to target Golden King crab, which opens at the same time. Golden King was fetching a little more than $4 a pound last year. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at aprn.org. We had reports tonight from Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, Casey Kelly in Homer, Dan Bross on the Yukon Quest Trail, Joe Viknicki in Petersburg, Tony Gorman in Wrangell, Robert Woolsey in Sitka, and the CBC's Nancy Thompson in Whitehorse. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C. Our audio engineers are Gooseberry Peter and Dave Waldron. John Prophet is our webmaster. Duncan Moon is our Vice President for Media Production, and I'm Laurie Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. It's never too early to set expectations and goals for your child's education. The UA College Savings Plan provides opportunities that can help you reach your educational savings goals. Save in Alaska, study anywhere. There's more information available by calling 1-888, the number 4, and then Alaska. This message sponsored by the UA College Savings Plan.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.